What you're about to hear is a really important feature that's made by our producer, Shelby Trainer. And Shelby's been looking at the whole issue of human gene editing. It's controversial because of the implications of what gene editing you might be doing, but for some conditions, it is the future. So how should we think about this, and what are the ethical considerations?
In 2018, a Chinese scientist made an announcement that shocked the world and landed him 3 years in prison.
Two beautiful little Chinese girls named Lulu and Lala came crying into the world as healthy as any other babies a few weeks ago.
He Zhangkui had changed the DNA of human embryos for the first time.
No one saw it coming, certainly not myself. Everybody was calling everybody and just saying, what's just happened? How could this happen?
I understand my work will be controversial.
It would later be discovered that He Zhangkui forged ethics approval and misled doctors into unknowingly implanting gene-edited embryos into two women.
I guess I thought that he was not as interested in fame as he turned out to be.
But I believe family need this technology, and I'm willing to take the criticism for them.
He did something that crossed a line that every country in the world has decided shouldn't be crossed. He made changes to the human genome that could be inherited. Human gene editing holds huge promise to cure disease and alleviate suffering. But changing our genes comes with huge ethical considerations too.
There are issues to do with things like playing God. Is it ethically appropriate for us to be manipulating the human genome in a way that's going to be passed on to future generations?
This year's prize is about rewriting the code of life.
In 2020, researchers Jennifer Doudna and Emmanuel Charpentier won the Nobel Prize in Chemistry.
For the development of a method for genome editing.
Every one of our cells contains a copy of our DNA, which can be thought of as the instruction manual our bodies need to be bodies. What these researchers had developed was called CRISPR. A set of genetic scissors capable of cutting away or changing parts of this instruction manual, with the goal of changing how the body behaves.
We have 3 billion A's, C's, G's and T's in sequence in our cells that encode the entirety of our genetic information, our legacy that we will pass down onto our children.
Professor John Rasko is a leading researcher in gene therapy, using techniques like CRISPR to treat genetic causes of disease. Gene editing was possible before CRISPR, but those techniques weren't as simple or precise.
So this new technology allows the possibility of us genetically adding, editing, or removing sequences of DNA that are then potentially permanently modified and can propagate into all of the cells that that particular target cells divide into.
And this year there was a promising breakthrough that tested the specificity of these genetic scissors. You might have seen the headlines about the CRISPR baby.
JJ received the first infusion of his drug on February 25th, 2025. This is the first time that a patient has received a personalized gene editing drug.
The story of KJ Muldoon, this little baby, was born with a genetic condition that affected his liver in particular and meant that he couldn't process proteins and would get ammonium toxicity and an early demise. This baby was kept alive, and within 2 weeks of birth, the geneticists who were looking after him already knew the precise genetic abnormality. And the team in Philadelphia, in collaboration with a company, started to create a bespoke genetic scissor, the CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing technology, to target the specific mutation in this baby's liver.
See, this isn't the first time humans have received CRISPR gene therapy, but it is the first time it was personalized.
So when the infusion starts, most of the drug actually gets into the liver and is taken up by the cells almost immediately after it's gotten into the bloodstream. CRISPR, a gene editor, enters the nucleus of the cell. And in this case, we programmed it to go to the site of the genetic variant that is actually causing the disease in KJ.
The drug is really designed only for KJ. So the genetic variants that he has are specific to him. It's personalized medicine.
This little baby became the poster baby for a bespoke precision medicine that was targeting a unique mutation in this baby's genome for the first time on the planet.
When this happened, I remember seeing a post about it on X from Chinese scientist He Zhengkui, and he called the case of baby KJ a double standard. He Zhengkui was released from prison in 2022, having served 3 years for editing the genomes of babies. But there's a big difference between what he did and what the scientists in Philadelphia did for KJ. The changes to KJ's DNA seem to be keeping him healthy, but they're changes to his somatic cells, meaning they won't be passed down to his kids. He Zhengkui was imprisoned for attempting to make changes to germline cells, which are passed down from one generation to the next to the next.
If we modify the germline, we open an ethical minefield because we're not just modifying the target person that carries these germline cells, but all of their descendants forever.
Yeah, hello. My name's Matthew Porteous. I'm a professor of pediatrics and stem cell biology at Stanford University.
Professor Porteous has been involved in gene editing research for decades, and so he crossed paths with He Zhengkui a few times.
I first met He Zhengkui at a small meeting of about 15, 20 people, but didn't really think much of it until sometime later he said that he was going to be in the area and look forward to meeting with me and talking to me about some of the work he was doing.
It was a pretty standard meeting. He Zhengkui talked about his attempts to use CRISPR to edit the germline cells of non-human primates. According to Professor Porteous, it didn't seem to be working all that well.
And then at the end of that hour-long conversation, or towards the end, he mentioned that he had plans to now use this in humans. Really said, look, I don't think your science justifies it. I don't think your rationale justifies it. And I think that if you do this, it will be a real setback for the field. I think he and his student were a bit shocked because I don't think he had heard such clear negative feedback on what he was doing from others.
This was a Friday, so the rest of his lab was out enjoying happy hour.
And I came stomping out and like, you cannot believe what I just heard and this and that. And so, yeah, I was fuming.
Professor Porteous thought after his negative reaction, there was no way He Zhengkui would go through with the plan to edit human embryos. What he didn't realise at the time was that He Zhengkui had already edited the embryos and they had already been implanted in the mother.
Didn't hear anything from him until I got off the plane in Hong Kong for the second international summit and met people in the hallways who said, have you heard? And I was like, have I heard what? And when we met at Stanford, I said, look, I respect the confidentiality of your research and I won't talk to anyone about it. In retrospect, I now think that was my mistake. I really should have talked to others. And because I had asked him, well, I think you should talk to others. Clearly he was, but he wasn't necessarily getting the same feedback that he was getting from me. I said, well, I've heard a little bit about what do you mean? And then heard his planned announcement that he had edited two human embryos and they had implanted them and babies had been born and so on and so forth.
This was all happening at the second International Summit on Human Genome Editing. World-leading experts were gathered all in one place, maximum impact.
Most people believe that his main goal in doing this was to be the first on the planet to do germline gene editing.
He Zhengkui did have a therapeutic goal in mind. He wanted these babies to be protected from HIV infection. The fathers were HIV positive.
Now, the principle of his idea was that we know there is a mutation called CCR5 gene mutation, which leads to resistance to HIV when it occurs in both of the copies of the genes that we all carry. Now, this is a relatively rare mutation, but it is observed naturally and in the natural state, we know that these individuals who happen to be born with this mutation of the CCR5 gene are highly resistant to HIV infection.
So his goal was to artificially introduce this mutation to the CCR5 gene of these embryos, and then use IVF to impregnate the mother without exposing her to HIV.
But it failed on so many levels. It was frankly a scientific and clinical debacle.
But the extent of that debacle was unclear until He Zhengkui was allowed half an hour to present to the summit.
He came from a genomics background. I thought that the data that was presented was actually very messy, very hard to interpret, but clearly demonstrated that the attempt at making mutations at the CCR5 gene was not efficient and certainly not clear that the genetic change that was intended had even been made.
One of the babies was born with only one of the copies of the genes changed and the other copy was intact, so there would never have been a possibility of a resistance to HIV. And the other baby had a change in the gene that was unintended, so the so-called off-target effects. So it was scientifically a failure in the first place, and the cells should never be implanted in the womb of the mother to carry the babies to term when he knew from the get-go there was improper targeting.
He was being very cagey about whether the trial was ongoing, and that's when he acknowledged that there was another baby on the way who hadn't been born yet.
This baby is known as Amy, but for obvious reasons, we don't have a lot of information about any of these children. Many scientists have called for them to be closely monitored in case the edits to their genomes have unintended consequences, and to monitor their offspring as well, to see if these changes are passed down to their children and their grandchildren.
This was a complete ethical, clinical, and scientific debacle. He did this secretly, he did it without ethical approval, and he did it without proper consent of the parents. And make no mistake, that is something that is illegal in pretty much every jurisdiction on the planet, including China.
He Zhengkui was found guilty of illegal medical practices. The court declared he and his two collaborators had crossed the bottom line of ethics in scientific research. But why does germline gene editing cross a line?
One day the technology is going to be, we're not going to have off targets. And the breach was that he did it, not that he did it when it wasn't safe. The question is, should we even do it at all?
On ABC Radio National, you're with the Health Report. This week we have a special feature from producer Shelby Traynor on human gene editing and the ethical implications.
There are issues to do with things like playing God. Is it ethically appropriate for us to be manipulating the human genome in a way that's going to be passed on to future generations?
Professor Diane Nicol is at the Centre for Law and Genetics at the University of Tasmania. She says a big issue is consent, because changes to a person's germline will be passed on to their children, their grandchildren, and so on into perpetuity.
How can an individual that's the grandchild of a person possibly consent to things that are being done to the egg cells from two generations ago?
Then there's the issue of designer babies.
What is acceptable to be done in terms of modifications? Is it for just sort of serious disease, or is it for things like sporting ability and brains and so on?
And it's not always one or the other. Take the CCR5 mutation that seems to protect people from HIV. This mutation is also thought to affect the brain, potentially boosting memory and improving a person's recovery from things like stroke or brain injury. In Australia, laws came into effect in 2002 restricting what can be done to human embryos.
And it was largely in response to concerns about human cloning.
Dolly the sheep had happened a few years before, and at the same time, researchers were exploring the use of embryonic stem cells to treat disease.
So you've got that tension between things that are considered to be morally abhorrent through to the moral imperative to treat human suffering. And this legislation draws a line between those two things. It says that certain things should be absolutely prohibited, one of which is human cloning. another of which is any techniques that make heritable changes to the human genome.
There are so many massive, potentially impossible issues that arise with germline editing. For example, if Lulu, Nana, or Amy suffer health issues because of the changes that were made to their genomes, Herzhangque could be liable. So if their children and their grandchildren inherit those issues as well, could he be charged every time those edits are passed on?
Now, we don't know if the changes were passed along to the germline of these children. So they may never go beyond this one generation, but they may. And if it was done efficiently, they would. And so by definition, then, human-induced intentional genetic changes in the germline will have been introduced into our race.
And it helps to put the issue into perspective. What happened earlier this year with the CRISPR baby, KJ Muldoon, was experimental. It isn't a widely approved therapy. Currently, there is only one gene therapy using CRISPR approved in a handful of countries, and so far this does not include Australia. Casgevy is a one-time therapy that treats sickle cell disease, a disease where red blood cells are misshapen and can't carry adequate oxygen around the body. And this treatment is $3 million.
And that illustrates the really big problem here. Even if you've got these wonderful techniques, how on earth do you make sure that they're provided equitably across the global population?
In theory, the more gene therapies on the market, the lower the price should drop. This is what Professor Rasko had expected.
I said, don't worry, everybody. I think that when the next phase of gene therapies come through of a similar type, the costs will begin to plummet so that everybody can avail themselves of this. Little did I know then, the second company absolutely matched dollar for dollar the same price, $3.5 million. And so at least I was proven badly wrong in that instance.
So there are quite a few hurdles to overcome before we get anywhere near the question of whether we should be editing germline cells en masse to cure disease. But that doesn't mean it's not going to happen again, well before we've settled on an answer.
When people talk about where will this be done again, and unfortunately I don't have enough faith in human nature that it won't be, I'm not so worried about China. I'm more worried about, again, one of these centimillionaires, billionaires deciding that they're going to open a clinic in a country that's relatively unregulated and recruit a bunch of people who share their viewpoint and have the technical expertise to do it, and they'll do it.
This question isn't going away. Why can't we edit human germline cells? Especially if it means knocking out cystic fibrosis, muscular dystrophy, sickle cell disease, before a baby is even born.
There would have to be so much research done to prove that this is a technique that's as safe as it could be to take that leap of faith, as it were, and particularly when it's going to be applied to future generations. It is a leap of faith. Then, of course, there's those really big ethical questions, but ethics and social values do change over time.
So you will be having discussions at your table?
A few years ago, Professor Nickel held a citizens' jury to ask everyday people, under what circumstances should we allow human gene editing?
It's about knowing that people are going to see the world differently.
I don't think it would ever be possible to reach complete consensus.
Listen with curiosity. Listen with interest.
The jury did come up with a set of recommendations, and surprisingly, they didn't say germline gene editing should be outlawed now and for forever.
There's a strong but non-consensual view that this technology be approved for treatments only after further research and with strict guidelines and government regulations.
They said it should be limited to circumstances where it can help people have healthy, genetically related children when there are no other options available. But in many cases, there are other options available. For example, genetic screening before a couple gets pregnant, or screening embryos before IVF to ensure a healthy transfer. It's rare for couples to have a 100% chance of passing on a genetic condition to their child.
It starts to become this just vanishingly small number of people that you actually think could benefit from that in theory. But then we're breaching this barrier of intentionally creating changes
in the genome that will be passed along through humanity in perpetuity. And that's where I just more recently have come to that maybe that's not worth it.
He Junkui, it would seem, has done his time in jail and he's found his way from Shenzhen now to Beijing, where he's set up a laboratory. It's very clear that he has not really shown remorse or regret or reflected deeply.
He Junkui did admit he moved too quickly, but stopped short of an apology. And he continues to campaign for restrictions on heritable gene editing to change.
As I said, at that meeting, I didn't know who he was. I still don't know who he is, really. I guess I thought that he was not as interested in fame as he turned out to be. We're all ambitious, so I'm not going to use that term, because I think he's no more ambitious than anyone else. I think he was more driven by notoriety than I anticipated among many of my scientific colleagues and scientific colleagues in China.
It's entirely possible, in my mind, that we're not ready for the responsibility as humankind to actually give ourselves the power to modify our future genetic inheritance.
Especially when we could saddle ourselves with the unintended consequences of gene editing, not just for the course of a single human life, but for the rest of human history.
For me, it's a humility and humbleness argument that we really know far less than we think we know.
Matthew Porteous finishing that story by Shelby Trainer. And if you want to hear more about genetic technology, you can check out Science Friction and their new series, Artificial Evolution. It traces the story of animal cloning using animal organs for transplants and genetically engineering food. That's Science Friction on the ABC Listen app.